Hi, welcome back to AR Zone. I'm your host, Carolyn Bailey. These continuing interviews on intersectional veganism and related issues are in association with VegFest UK. In today's interview, Roger and I welcome our special guest, Michelle Carrera. Michelle is a professional translator, writer, and founding director of the vegan nonprofit Chilies on Wheels, an organization that helps to provide people in need with warm vegan meals via chapters across the United States and Puerto Rico. Michelle has worked with a wide range of animal advocacy organizations and has also worked in adult literature, immigration, food justice, and reproductive rights initiatives. Such a wide spectrum of activism has shaped her view of connected struggles. She also leads talks on veganism and hunger, low-income vegan living, and community building. Michelle joins us today to speak about all of these issues, as well as her contribution to the new book, Veganism in an Oppressive World. Thanks for being with us, Michelle, and welcome to AR Zone.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Michelle, I have to admit that I'm personally very excited to speak with you today. Throughout our series of intersectionality interviews with so many of our guests, one name keeps coming up as doing incredible work, and that's yours and Chilies on Wheels. So it's a real pleasure to have you be our guest today. In the book you wrote about Chilies on Wheels, would you please tell our listeners who this group is and what they do?
So Chilies on Wheels, you are a vegan soup kitchen food distribution for vegan meals to people that don't have the resources, people that are food insecure or going through homelessness. We have chapters in a couple of cities, but it started mainly in New York, and I started it myself with my son. And it's just spread into just a wider kind of network for the community, a network of support for the community. And we have other services that we provide. We have community services like a free store with items that are not tested on animals, like soaps and personal care products and things like that. We do vegan education. We actually talk to the communities about veganism, communities of low income, and try to frame it into their world and frame it into their budget. And we engage children to volunteer in, because there's not a lot of opportunities for young children to volunteer in general. And so we find that it's very important to engage children both in their communities and in veganism.
I love that you engage children, Michelle. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, there really is a big need in general, for organizations to have children involved. I think children, if you have these events for children and they grow up thinking that this is just the way life is, to engage with the community is normal, then you'll have participatory adults that will regard this as normal, you know. So I think that's very important, to have children engage from a really young age.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Hi, Michelle. Your program that is outlined in your website looks pretty impressive. You've got emergency vegan food relief, vegan dog food relief, vegan education, youth engagement. You just kind of mentioned that. So would you like to talk about any or all of those programs?
Sure. So it all started just with the food. The food was the first program, the first element. We just gave out. We made the first few meals that we made were only 15 meals, and we took it out to the community, and that has grown. And now in New York City alone, every week we do at least 200 meals in the summer, and in the winter, well, the amount goes down a little bit, but we still are out there every single week, and there's a big need for that. In New York City, there were no vegan soup kitchens, and that's how it all started. And as we went out and we'd meet people that are going through homelessness or that are food insecure, that are vegan and that have no opportunities to get meals from the other regular soup kitchens, something they tell us a lot is that even the safe option, which would be the salad option, already has like dairy dressings on it. And so they can't even have that. So we've seen that there's a big, big, big need for that, for vegan food out to people that need it, as well as it's just a way of engaging people and talking, being able to talk about veganism without this misconception of it being an elite thing or expensive or something unattainable. So it's a great way to do vegan education.
Do you go out on a particular day each week?
So it varies per city, but in New York City, for example, it's every Saturday at 1 in the afternoon in Tompkinsville Park.
And do you kind of liaise with the other groups going out so you don't clash or anything like that, is it?
No, we've been there already 4 years, and you know, we've gotten to meet some of the other food service agencies, but they're all different, they're all scattered, and the need is so great that even if that we were all out there, we still wouldn't cover the entire need. In New York City alone, there's 60,000 people on a given night that are homeless. The services that are there don't cover the need.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I studied social policy at university, and one of the issues there is the fact that groups like yourself kind of letting the state off the hook in a way. But I know it's kind of got to be done. You know, it's kind of like one of the weird things that, you know, the state will use agencies in order to do the job that they should be covering in the first place.
That's definitely true, but at the same time, if the groups aren't out there, then it's the people that are going to be suffering. And in the United States, there's now a trend of trying to make these services illegal in order to push people away. So there are cities like Fort Lauderdale in Florida and L.A., Los Angeles in California, where they're passing these ordinances so that it's illegal to feed the homeless or to, you know, to give out food, so that these populations will not remain in those cities, to like kind of like push them away, criminalizing poverty so that poverty doesn't stay around, which to me is horrid. And yeah, there's people that have
That's one of the most awful things I think I've heard in a long time. I actually heard something about that a little while ago. I think it was probably just a Facebook post or something. And I'm actually speechless. I don't have words for it.
Yeah, no, it's really, really horrible. And in Florida, there's one particular man. He's involved with a church, and he has to be something like 90 years old, and he has been arrested numerous amount of times because he keeps going out there trying to, you know, to feed folks, and he just keeps getting arrested. 91 years old reverend from a church. It's pretty horrible. Yeah,
you'll have to take this out of the recording, Roger, because it made me cry and I can't talk for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I had heard about it. It's just, yeah, governments all around the world are doing similar things, I guess, but it's
amazing, isn't it? You know, making the idea of one person, one citizen, feeding another citizen illegal, it's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's twofold, right? So they're criminalizing poverty, but they're also criminalizing empathy. And the repercussions of that, you know, if you feel down the line, because, you know, down the line, if you know that you can't help someone else out that's in trouble, what is that going to look like for society in the long run, where you think that it's wrong to help one another? So, and what does that say to, like, animals? You know, how does that, you know, trickle down to what is right? How is it right to treat animals? Or, you know, you can't.
There's nothing positive about it. It's just everything that's going to come from that is negative for everybody, and in the long term for the government as well. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
Anyway.
are you recovered, Helen?
I've recovered. Yes, I apologize.
I was going to ask about the vegan dog food, but we should probably just go straight into your next question, I think, probably.
Okay, sure. In your essay, Michelle, you speak about the increasing importance placed on the consumeristic aspect of veganism and how that can exclude a lot of vegans. Would you please explain what you mean by that?
Sure. So even myself, as someone who's not very wealthy and who has had, you know, as a single mother, has had hardships just in general, a lot of the vegan community seems to be focused on the products that are out there, on the consumer side of it, on what new brands are out there of these, you know, cheeses, and it's all great. They're all great products, but it seems that focus on the consumer aspect of it shuts a lot of people out, and the conversation becomes on the newest restaurant that just opened, the brand new, you know, pâté that just came out, and so it kind of leaves the animals out of that conversation because it focuses on the consumer aspect of the product that's served. Now, I understand that it's always great when there's more things available. It helps a greater amount of population to, you know, to turn vegan. It's easier. But it does shift the conversation away from the reason why we're vegan, which is animals, you know, and it shuts the conversation of the other aspects of veganism and the other aspects of what we need to do for animals to free them, entertainment, clothing, etc. And it shuts off a lot of people that can't afford those things. And so I think that it does a disservice in the long run.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I've experienced that as well. One thing that I've noticed recently is people attending protests are required to buy T-shirts to wear at the protest so that they look all as if they're wearing a uniform. The T-shirts are $30 each or thereabouts. And then there's the cost of attending the protest, and, you know, there are other costs associated. So I'm finding a lot of people just simply can't afford to attend a protest because they can't afford what that requires.
And if you broaden that to transportation to those places, I mean, it makes it harder for people to join. And when we think about how the world is structured, you know, you have the greater amount of people are working class people, right? Like it's a little pyramid. And so the greater amount of people are not going to be able to afford these things and are going to think that is not for me. You know, I can't afford it, so that's not for me, and push it away and make it seem unattainable. Instead of opening up, you know, the conversation, saying, wait, that's not what it's about.
Exactly. And it would be good to see a little bit more understanding from the vegans who can afford to do those things. It would be nice if they sort of just understood that not everybody is in the same situation that they're in.
Which is also not to absolve, you know, is not to then justify animal use. You know, it's not to say then, well, it's okay, you can't afford it, so you're okay using the animals. Mm. It's trying to, you know, because that's not, that I don't believe that either. You know, I think that we all have the ability to go vegan. It's just a matter of finding the framework for it in our lives or having someone show us that framework, you know? So it's not to absolve the responsibility, but it's to say what I'm doing to advocate for veganism is not working for this particular community. So what else can I do, and how can I reach them? And, you know, how can I find someone who is already vegan that lives that community, that is part of that community? Because you also don't want someone from outside to come in and be patronizing, you know, and say, well, you can do that if you do this. You want to find someone in the community already.
In the book, Michelle, you mentioned a man who was homeless at the time that you met him, and he said to you, I fight for the animals, but nobody fights for me. I found that really upsetting. What did he mean by that, and what can we as a community do better to ensure that this doesn't continue?
What I took away from what he was saying is that, you know, that he was fighting for the animals. He wants the animals to be free, to have these opportunities for life, and he's vegan and he's trying to do all these things, but no one from the vegan community is talking about any of the other issues, especially in that area in New Hampshire where I met him. So what I think is that we need to, you know, we need to be intersectional. We need to look at the greater oppressions that there are as well and fight them on different fronts. You know, we need to, someone who is vegan, who is homeless, is fighting for the animals and trying to also fight for, you know, for homeless rights, for being able to camp or for being able to have healthy food available, for all the housing, affordable housing. So he's trying to fight for all these things. And us as vegans need to kind of find those intersections too and and fight them jointly. We can't just, it can't just be about the animals, because the humans are the vegans, you know. We are the allies, and so we have to fight for the allies as well.
Absolutely. Thanks, Michelle.
Michelle, there are two Food Not Bombs groups in the Dublin area, and I kind of volunteer with one now and again. It's quite uplifting to provide vegan food for those in the greatest need, but obviously it's the service that's the real kind of thing. But possibly to finish the podcast on a bittersweet note, you know, there's you know, it's obviously a very serious thing, but you also, you know, see some fairly kind of interesting and hilarious things that go on as well. Do you have that kind of experience too?
Yeah, I mean, we get all sorts of people. My favorite part of Chili's on Wheels is meeting everyone. It's going out there and building these, you know, these friendships, because we don't just see them once, and, you know, we see them every week. And for the most part, they tend to be the same people that just come back every week. And so we've had these friendships already for like 4 years of people, and they've come and they've gone. But there's some that we've known them for this whole amount of time, and just knowing their lives, and some of them are funny and some of them tell jokes, and, you know, and some of them aren't so funny, and some of them have more hardships than others, and just kind of coming together. We eat with them too, so it's not like a, you know, we don't just serve them and that. We're eating together. We're spending some time together, getting to know them. So yeah, so we see pretty much everything. I mean, we feel hardships when they're going through something particularly harsh, political too. Sometimes the New York police has also been known to, like, destroy their property or go around and kick them out of the park or, you know, these things. And, you know, they come the next week and they tell us about that. And it's hard sometimes to kind of carry their, you know, the problems. And because they're our friends, they've become our friends. And so it's hard, you know, but that's part of it. I would say that's the most important thing that we're doing, really.
Yeah. There's a thing that they've been doing in Ireland recently is putting spikes on buildings to stop people lying down and stuff, you know. So, there's a lot of seem to be kind of it's interesting as well, isn't it? Because like some of these people, you know, they really, you know, they work in a way that they bust all the myths about the homeless, you know. Because like we do ordinary outreach as well on a Saturday, you know, and some of the most generous people are the homeless ones. You know, so you know, there's a lot of kind of mythology and kind of like bad ideology about the homeless, and I think that, you know, these kind of events kind of, you know, help to kind of bust those myths a little bit, I think.
Oh, for sure. And in places like, for example, New York, a lot of the people that that we see have full time jobs. They just can't afford New York City rents. New York City rents are so through the roof that even if you work 40 hours, you know, if you earn minimum wage, that's not enough for you to be able to afford a house. And so, I mean, we see a lot of that. We see a lot of people that work and you know, are successful in holding down their jobs. They just can't make ends meet even. So, yeah. So there's a lot of these ideas of what being homeless means are, you know, are false, really. They're just stereotypes that don't hold true.
Michelle, before we go today, is there anything that you would like to say to our audience that we haven't thought to ask you, or do you have a message that you'd like to leave with us?
I would always say to just keep working at it. Keep working for the animals, and don't forget the people who are working for the animals, and your empathy. Expand your empathy to include the people, because all the oppressions are linked together. All our hardships are linked.
I think that's wonderful advice. Michelle, thank you so much for spending your time with us today. And I really wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for the work that you've been doing and the work that you'll continue to do. I think that you're making a huge difference in so many lives. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
You're so very welcome.
Nurses past maturity. No member of the animal kingdom ever did a thing to me. So I don't eat red meat or white fish. Don't give me no blue cheese.